Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. December 5th is the day. That's right, December 5th is the launch of the new podcast we have coming out called The Justin Stenstrom Show. That's JustinStenstrom. I hope you've marked your calendars already, but if you have not, make sure you do so right now. This show is going to be incredible. We've got dozens of interviews already recorded and waiting to go, and I cannot wait to show you how awesome these episodes are. The guests we have are going to amaze you, and the content they share with us will blow you away. The new show will feature the world's highest achievers, experts, and celebrities sharing their most inspiring stories and helpful advice. Aside from marking your calendars and waiting for the new show to come out, there's just three small but very important things I need you to do. The first thing is on December 5th, make sure you subscribe to the new show on iTunes. The second thing is leave a review for the show right after you subscribe. And the third and final thing I need you to do is share the show with your friends. After you subscribe and review the show, take that iTunes link and share it on your favorite social media platform, whether that's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, or something else. Just help us spread the word for this baby so more incredible people like you can get to see what we're all about. We want to help as many people become their best possible selves, and it all starts with you. You're the best way we can make this happen. So please help us out on December 5th by subscribing, reviewing, and sharing The Justin Stenstrom Show on iTunes. And yeah, don't forget to listen to all of our amazing episodes. As you can probably tell by now, I'm really excited and can't wait to show you how incredible this new show is going to be. Okay, without further ado, enjoy today's episode. On today's episode, episode number 95, entitled Make Peace With Your Mind, we chat with meditation expert and therapist Mark Coleman. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from ElitemanMagazine.com, and my guest today is a meditation teacher, therapist, and author of the book Make Peace With Your Mind, Mark Coleman. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Mark, can you just give our listeners a quick little background about what it is you do specifically, and then we'll kind of dive more into the book you just came out with?
Yeah, so I do a lot of different things. Obviously, I'm an author. I'm a meditation teacher. I've been teaching for about 20 years, primarily teaching mindfulness practice, both in a traditional Buddhist setting, but also I teach in Fortune 500 companies across the states and organizations like the UN. So I do that through my work, the Mindfulness Institute. But I also have a passion for nature and integrating a contemplative awareness into the outdoors. And I do that through my company called Awaken the Wild. And I have a book of the same name. So I'm mostly teaching and training and bringing these ancient practices into contemporary situations to make them accessible and relevant.
Love it, man. How does anyone really get into sort of the teachings that you make? Like, what was it, I guess, in your life that made you go down this path?
Well, usually what draws most people in is some kind of pain. I was an angry young man. I was a punk rocker anarchist. I was raging against the man, the machine. And I was all about blame and anger out there. And I thought if only I could fix all the problems out there, I'd be happy. And then when I stumbled across a meditation center in an obscure part of London a long time ago, and I realized they were saying, no, turn that attention inwards and see what the source of your suffering is inside. And I began to see, oh, there's this whole lot of mental machinations going on that were really much more fundamental to my anguish and existential distress. And so through the practice of mindfulness, which really grows that lens of awareness and self-awareness, I began to see particularly this stream of thought, which I call the critic, the inner critic, the self-judgmental thoughts, particularly pernicious in causing a sense of lack of self-worth and self-hatred and despair. And so I began to really hone my attention on that, which has been my work for the last couple of decades.
Cool. We'll start first with like mindfulness. What, in your sort of definition of the word, what does mindfulness mean to you? And I mean, because it's kind of a popular term right now. A lot of people are, you know, talking about it. What is mindfulness specifically in your definition of it?
Yeah, mindfulness. My simple definition of mindfulness is clear awareness. It's simply knowing what's happening, being aware of your inner and outer experience. It's knowing what's happening in your mind, your body, your environment, but it's a particular kind of knowing. It's consciously being aware of what's happening, right? So we can drive, you know, through Nevada and space out for 5 hours, and if you, someone asks you where were you, and you would have no idea. Mindfulness is consciously being present for what it is that you're doing, which is easier said than done, because of our, whether it's our devices, our busy mind, we're lost in the future and the past. We're actually rarely in the physical sensory present. And so mindfulness is a simple way to train the attention, train awareness to learn how to be much more focused and present right here, right now.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, consciously being present for what you're doing. A lot of people, I feel like, often live in the future or in the past. You know, they're worrying about what's going to happen next, or they're kind of angry or upset or depressed even about what has happened in the past. And mm-hmm. you're all about training people about how to consciously live in, I guess, the moment, live in the now.
Yes, absolutely. And you can do that in many ways. You can do that through formal meditation, through training the attention to pay attention, for example, to the breath, which is the most common form of, you know, attention training practices. But you can also do it like right now. I'm sitting looking out the window, watching the rain come down through the trees, and I'm just simply present to that experience or present to this conversation. You can do it. Train your attention through sports, through music, through creativity, through simply just being attentive to what's happening moment to moment, which mostly means for most of us coming out of our heads, coming out of our thoughts and worries and plans and fears, and actually just noticing what's here.
So the Mindfulness Institute, what is that exactly, and how did you come up with that?
Well, so I trained in a classical Buddhist tradition for many years, and I realized that most people weren't going to walk into a Buddhist center. They weren't interested in doing the rigor that it takes to do that. And so I wanted to find a way to make these very simple, accessible practices really immediate and useful and relevant to people in their lives. So I formed the Institute as a way to hold trainings and workshops and go into companies and organizations and healthcare settings and actually deliver these practices in a very simple and pragmatic way. So when I started doing that almost 20 years ago, there wasn't, you know, mindfulness wasn't on the front cover of Time magazine, and, you know, football teams like the Seahawks, you know, or the Warriors weren't meditating back then, but now they are. And that's partly because people like myself have actually found ways to make these practices, you know, accessible and relevant, which of course they are. They're very universal and they're very immediate.
Is the Institute more of like a school, a temple, a business kind of organization? I mean, I'm kind of like just trying to picture it in my head.
Yeah. It's really a business, and it's a collection of people. I mean, I'm the primary teacher, but I will, you know, I have other consultants that work for me, and we basically go and work with individuals. We offer executive coaching with that, but primarily we go into a company and work with an executive team, and they want to learn about mindfulness and how it impacts leadership, or they want to learn about mindfulness and communication. I flew out to Africa to work with the UN, to work with some country directors, because they're wanting to find better ways to deal with stress. And so I'll deliver, you know, a tailor-made program that addresses the needs of the people of the organization through using mindfulness and how that self-awareness creates, you know, more effective leaders, better communication, works with conflict and stress in a team, etc.
Awesome. And as far as some of the things you teach about meditation, like What is the sort of your best tips around meditation? How can someone start meditating, implementing that in their life right now?
Well, the best way to start is to just start. And of course, if you have guidance, all the better. There's a slew of apps out there right now you can download. I'm on an app called will.com, which has hundreds of guided meditations. I think what's key with starting is you start, like with anything, like with exercise or playing the violin, you start with a bite-sized piece. So you start with 2 minutes or 5 minutes, and you just take time to be quiet, close the eyes, focus on the breath, notice each time your attention wanders, and you come back. And so the first step of meditation is learning to train the attention to be in the present moment. And the breath, as an example, is a useful way to do that. So I would suggest to people, they start regularly, start with 5 minutes a day, find an app that that you can get some guidance with, and just give it a go and give it a couple of weeks, start small and then build up. You know, add 5 minutes, add another 5 minutes. So you're up to 15, 20 minutes, and then begin to see what works. Ideally, you want to find a teacher or a guide to help you, you know, see where you're, you know, not able to implement the practice, or where you're getting into difficulties. Just like, you'd hire a coach or a trainer. Ideally, you want to have some instruction once you've had the general basic instructions.
Is this like, being in a quiet, maybe dark room with like your legs crossed and maybe some relaxing music going on, or can it be like anywhere? Can you meditate really anywhere?
Yeah, so you can meditate anywhere. I mean, I actually like to use the word meditative awareness rather than meditation, because meditation sounds like a thing that's esoteric, that you've got to wear beads and you've got to go to a cave somewhere. I mean, really, mindfulness is simply paying attention. So you can be paying attention running for the bus. You can be paying attention sitting in traffic. You can be paying attention in a boring board meeting, right? So it's, how do you train your attention to be present? And so you could be sitting at your desk. I often will be coaching people to do 5 minutes of the focused attention practice while they're in the car before they get out before they go to work or before they go home. Or they're sitting, I have a client who's a lawyer who meditates in his closet in his office downtown San Francisco. So it doesn't really matter where you are. It helps to be uninterrupted. It helps to be not self-conscious, so you can close your eyes without feeling, awkward in an office setting. But you can really do it anyway. You can do it lying down in bed at night. You can, but obviously the quieter place that you can find, the better. And you turn off your phone and you simply learn to bring your attention over and over here, and then notice what gets in the way. Notice all the various thoughts and fears and memories that keep pulling you off.
Don't forget, guys, December 5th is the day. That's right, December 5th is the launch of the new podcast we have coming out, The Justin Stenstrom Show. That's JustinStenstrom. I hope you've marked your calendars already, but guys, if you have not, make sure you do so right now. This show is going to be incredible. We've got dozens of interviews already recorded and waiting to go, and I cannot wait to show you how awesome these episodes are. The guests we have are going to amaze the hell out of you, and the content they share will blow you away. The new show will feature the world's highest achievers, experts, and celebrities sharing their most inspiring stories and helpful advice. Aside from marking your calendars and waiting for the new show to come out, I know you guys are eager, there's just three small but very, very important things I need you to do. The first thing is, on December 5th, make sure you subscribe to the new show on iTunes. The second thing is, make sure you leave an incredible review right after you subscribe. And the third, and probably most important thing of all, is share this show with your friends. After you subscribe and review, take that iTunes link and share it on your favorite social media platform, whether that's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, or something else entirely. Just help us spread the word for this baby so more incredible people like you can get to see what we're all about. Look, guys, we want to help as many people as possible. We want to help everyone become their best possible selves, and it all starts with you. You're the best way we can make this happen. So please help us out on December 5th by subscribing, reviewing, and sharing the Justin Stenstrom Show on iTunes. And oh yeah, don't forget to listen to all of our amazing episodes. Guys, you can probably tell by now I'm really, really excited with this, and I cannot wait to share with you how incredible this new show is going to be. I know you're going to love it. So please help us out December 5th, but trust me, you are going to love the Justin Stenstrom Show. Okay, guys, without further ado, let's get back to the episode. When you're meditating, are you typically thinking about something, you know, going on in your life that you want to sort of get over? Or is it more of just like trying to be aware of like your breath and what's happening right now? Like basically, are you, when you meditate, is the goal to, or can the goal be to figure out a problem going on in your life, or like think about something you want to, you know, solve? Or is it more about just sort of relaxing and stepping into the exact moment right now of like what's happening with your breathing and just kind of listening or not really thinking about anything?
Yeah, well, you know, it's important to say there's hundreds of kinds of meditations, right? There's breath, there's visualizations, there's mantra, there's reflective meditations, there's you know, there's a whole plethora of practices. I would say in their essence, you could divide them into two main groups. One is developing concentration, focus, right? So we use a breath, you might use a mantra, and you're learning how to train the mind on a single object to stay present, notice when it wanders, and you come back. And that's a sort of very fundamental meditation training. But for example, in general mindfulness practice, you're learning how to be present to the totality of your experience. So you might start with the breath, but you're also bringing awareness to how your body's feeling, to the posture, to any aches and pains. You're noticing what emotions are coming and going. You're noticing the thoughts and images and ideas that are coming. You're aware of sounds and space around you. So ultimately, with mindfulness practice, you're learning simply to be present to what's happening. And then when you get up from your meditation chair, then you go outside and you're walking to catch the bus or you're in Uber, you're simply maintaining that quality of attentiveness, right? And of course, you might have to think and strategize and plan and make phone calls, but you can do all of that with that same present moment attention. So you think of meditation a bit like the lab or the gym, where you're training that muscle of awareness. But the point isn't to live in the gym. The point is to live, you know, healthily outside the gym. So you're applying that focused awareness and attention that you've developed in the practice into your life, into the conversations with your kids, into how you're talking in a meeting at work or how you're working out at the gym.
So I guess the big question then is, what is all this sort of awareness or focus that you're developing? What can this do for your life?
Well, you know, it can do many things. And in context of the book that I've just written as an example, so the point of mindfulness is it develops clarity and understanding, right? When we develop awareness, we become more self-aware, and we see various patterns, habits, tendencies. We see what's getting in the way of me feeling peaceful and happy and free and free of stress, for example. And what supports me feeling at ease and calm and clear? And so without that self-awareness, that's not possible. So we develop mindfulness as a way of cultivating self-understanding and about the ways that we trip ourselves up. And of course, in the book, what I wrote about, one of the main ways we trip ourselves up is by believing and listening to the inner critic that's oft always talking about how we're not good enough, how we should have done things differently, how we're, you know, an imposter. And so the more that we get clear, for example, with that mental habit that's always down on who we are, then the more we listen to that, the more we believe that, the more we're going to feel diminished and suffer. So the mindfulness, the meditation, the awareness is in service of understanding, in service of us living a more free and happy and creative life.
Awesome, man. I love that that answer. So diving more into the book that you just came out with, what is it that you talk in the book about what creates, drives, and disarms the critic. So I guess the first question really is, what is the critic and kind of where does it come from?
Yeah. So the inner critic is it's a mental habit. It's comes in the form of words, thoughts, ideas, and it's primarily a very negative, critical voice that's oriented towards what we've done wrong, how we're not good enough, the ways that we're an imposter, and basically is it arose, it developed as in infancy, you know, when we come into this life, you know, as children, as infants, there's a wildness, there's a passion, there's urges and strong emotions and a lot of rage and fears. And you know, our psyche had to find a way to sort of rein that in because a lot of that stuff is not acceptable. You know, to be a wild child in this society is not, you know, is not very accepted. So our psyche finds a way to shut that down. And the way it does that is through the what Freud called the superego, the inner critic, the shaming ourselves. So we learn how to basically be a good boy and a good girl, you know, in that, using that language. And what happens is that mechanism of judging, of criticizing, of shutting ourselves down, of shaming and blaming ourselves, takes root. And even though, you know, we may have left home 15 years ago, but we still find that same critical voice. Maybe it's the voice of our parents, of a school teacher or a priest who was critical and judgmental of us. And so we internalize those thoughts, those judgments, and then we listen to them repeatedly. And one of the sadnesses of what the work of the critic is that we believe it's true. We give it a lot of space, a lot of authority. And we think all these negative thoughts about ourselves, we actually think they're true. But if we asked any of our friends or colleagues, hey, do you think, you know, I'm stupid or I'm hopeless or I'm never going to find love or I'm unlovable or, you know, the many, many things that I hear people talking about their self-judgments, most people say, no, that's not true. No, you know, you might have your stuff, but, you know, you're basically a good, kind person. So the net effect of that is we feel diminished. We feel, you know, bad or hopeless or unworthy or, you know, deficient ultimately.
Mm-hmm. And what drives these critics like later on? Like, what is it that pops up that makes the critic that we each have? What makes them come about again and what, like, surface and, you know, bring all this negativity that it brings?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's good for each of us to look at what triggers our own critics. So I would say at the fundamental level, usually what's going on is our critics responding to vulnerability and trying to avert us feeling pain. So, for example, but it does it in a very misguided way. So say, for example, you're giving a lecture and you're using your PowerPoint and for whatever reason, you're not very prepared and you don't give your best performance and you don't get great feedback from whoever the client was. And so your critic, fearing that disapproval, fearing maybe a loss of a contract or a loss of, you know, goodwill from your boss or whoever, tries to, you know, take care of you in a way by judging you, saying that was hopeless, that was pathetic, you've got to get your stuff together, you can't work like that, you're really gonna, you know, just blow it all. And so it responds in a way that's trying to actually prevent us from further pain, just as it was doing when we were 3 or 5 years old, but it does so in a way that's not constructive. And so rather than coming up with constructive criticism, it just criticizes the person, right? So it's a bit like the difference between what's called process-centered praise and person-centered praise. So when little Johnny's at the breakfast table and he throws his toast on the floor, right? And the old school would be, Johnny, you're a bad boy for doing that, which is person-centered criticism versus, hey, Johnny, you know, when you throw your food from the table, that's not so great. Let's find a better way to do that. Let's find a different way to do that, right? So we're critiquing the action, not the person. But the critic goes sort of for the jugular and says, you're a loser, you're pathetic, your presentation sucked, and you know, never get hired again, right? And of course, that once we have, you know, if someone else is saying that to us, or our own critic is saying that to us, it clams up the mind. We get foggy. We can't think straight. We're triggered. We feel a little, you know, oppressed. And so it's a very unconstructive way of trying to deal with that, that risk or fear or vulnerability of, say, not performing well at work. So we have to find other ways. We have to sort of sideline the critic, notice what it's saying, and then actually listen to more healthier parts of the mind, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you kind of just mentioned it a little bit, but is there any other ways to really disarm the critic that we have? Like, how do we shut it down? How do we move on from it? How do we have that positive feedback in our own minds instead of sort of that negative reinforcement that just brings us down over time?
Yeah, so in the book, I have a lot of strategies. I call it the inner critic toolkit. And so the first stop is always mindfulness. We have to first notice that it's happening. So we bring that awareness. We listen to our mind and our thoughts, and we say, oh, that's a discernment. That's a judgment. We notice how much we believe it. We notice how much we might give that critical voice authority, which we don't have to, but we usually do. We notice how much we believe it. And then once we're clear that judgment's going on and we've given it authority or believing it, then there's a whole bunch of strategies you can do. My favorite strategy is humor. If we can find the lightness in it, we can have more space. There's a great line from this activist and clown, Wavy Gravy, who says, if you don't have a sense of humor, it just ain't funny. And same with the critic. If you can't see the human in it, then we start to feel miserable about it. So, for example, I used to dress my wig up when I could feel my critic going. I used to imagine this English judge with this long gray wig saying, bad, you're wrong, stupid. And, you know, sometimes the critic is generally pretty predictable because it's sort of a primitive structure that developed early in our brain. So it's not that sophisticated. And I know that when I lose my keys or trip over in the street or forget to call my mother on her birthday or whatever it is, my critic's going to start its merry tune. And I'm sort of prepared for it. It's like, oh, hello, old friend. Nice to see you. What do you have today? Oh, I'm a terrible person. I'm a terrible son. Or for example, when I'm running late to teach my mindfulness class at my local meditation center, and here I am supposed to be the embodiment of mindfulness, and I'm leaving the house and I'm late and I can't find my keys. And I know my critic's going to be on my case for being disorganized and not having it together. And I'll just say, oh, Mr. Mindfulness wins the day again. You know, and I just take it lightly. And so the more that we can find a playfulness, a humor, and see that it's an old voice. Sometimes it's very obvious, the voice of our father or mother or priest or somebody. And we just say, oh, yes, thank you. That's very interesting. Anything else you have to say? So we do kind of a jujitsu tai chi move where we just, rather than trying to defend ourselves, you know, and trying to, oh no, I'm really a good person. I really am organized. Look at the 10 things I did yesterday, which means we've already lost the argument because if we start debating with the critic, we've lost because we've given it authority. And what we want to do is actually notice it, but sort of dismiss it. Just like a yapping dog that was, you know, in your neighbor's yard, you eventually just have to ignore it. And that's similar to the critic. You know, occasionally we want to be clear why it's triggered, you know, what the vulnerability or the fear that caused it is. But mostly we want to just notice it and then not really give it the time of day. Just like if a friend of yours was walking around with you and yapping all day about your faults and your vulnerabilities, you know, you wouldn't give it the time of day. You wouldn't put up with it for 5 minutes. So it's the same with the critic. Sometimes we say, no, stop, not useful, not true, not helpful. Sometimes we can inquire into the critic and say, is this really true? Is it really true that I'm a bad person? Is it really true I'm not going to get my life together? Is it really true my life's going to end in ruin? And what we find with the critic is it operates a lot in the past and the future. So it spins out this nightmare scenario in the future, which of course we can never know. So it's not really not worth giving it the time of day. Or it has what I call 20/20 hindsight. And it's judging us for all the things that we could have, would have, should have done. You know, the investments, the relationships, the house that we should have got, or whatever it is. And we just know, you know, we all do the best we can, and it doesn't serve us to beat ourselves up for decisions that we're now looking at 10 years hence.
Cool, man. I love some of those steps too, by the way, and reminds me of self-hypnosis CDs that I'd listened to in the past. Some of the work by Paul McKenna and Richard Bandler, where they would basically do something very similar to what you just mentioned, where you're turning the critic into like something comical. Like, I forget what they mentioned exactly, but they'd like dress their critic up or picture their critic as, you know, wearing underwear or something, and, you know, a wig, and, you know, just something goofy like that, where they would get to laugh about it, like you said, and it just totally like disarms, I guess, the power that it has over you, which I think is pretty cool.
Yes, very much.
Mark, what are your best tips? Because, I mean, this is also in the book as well. What are your best tips for happiness, freeing yourself, and then living a fulfilling life?
What are my best tips for happiness and living a free life? Well, in the context of this conversation about mindfulness and the critic, I think the more that we can learn to live in the present moment, the more we can learn to enjoy what's here. We live in a beautiful world, and there's so much possibility for joy and happiness if we're present, whether it's the look in a child's eye or the sunlight falling through the clouds or watching a sports game, or, you know, there's a multitude of possibility for happiness. But as they say in Vegas, you have to be present to win. You have to be present to experience that. And I would say, in the context of the critic work, the less that we give attention and authority to the critic, the less we believe its distorted perception of us, and actually more learn to incline our mind and our heart towards the positive, towards the good, towards what's positive and creative in the world, then the more that will be the lens and the world in which we live in.
Awesome, man. Thanks. Thanks for that. I really appreciate it. And one final sort of question is, what is your relationship with Troy Aikman as far as meditation goes?
So you're asking that because he endorsed the book, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So I met Troy on a meditation retreat. Some years ago, he came to the center I was working at, and really was curious about the practice of mindfulness. I don't know whether that was inspired, I don't remember now, by the Seahawks quarterback, Wilson. Mm-hmm. But like many athletes, they're seeing that, you know, to improve your game, to be in the zone, it's very similar to mindfulness. And so he, like many others, have been studying meditation and mindfulness as a way of enhancing and optimizing, our human potential. And so that's how we got to know each other.
Love it, man. Yeah, and I think you're right, man. The Warriors, the Seahawks, Troy Aikman, you know, all these people, all these athletes at the top of their game, at the top of their professions, are embracing this meditation, this mindfulness. I think there's really something to be said about how just incredible it is and how helpful it can be in all different aspects of life, whether that's just everyday well-being, or, you know, an athlete trying to perform at his highest game, or something else. But even like business professionals can use this kind of stuff. So I think it speaks volumes when you have people like that, you know, reaching out to you and trying to work with you and improving their meditation. Mark, is there any last sort of send-off message you'd like to leave our audience, and then also a place that our listeners can check out more about you?
Yeah. So last message would be, if this works interesting to you, it starts with practice. So find a way to have an introduction to mindfulness. You know, it could be through the app I mentioned, will.com, W-H-I-L.com. Start paying attention to those voices inside, and find ways and strategies to distance yourself so you can actually have a more holistic, positive, and constructive view and relationship with yourself. And so you can actually have more enhanced capacity in your life and in the world. And in terms of finding my work, the easiest place is to go to markcoleman.org, M-A-R-K Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N.org. And you'll be linked to various websites. One of them is called Awaken the Wild for my nature work, and the Mindfulness Institute, and other places. So, and also to my books, so Make Peace with Your Mind and Awaken the Wild.
Mark, thanks so much for that, man. I thank you for really, you know, sharing your wisdom with our audience and just providing some awesome, awesome tips for our guys. So thanks again, man, for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Alright guys, that's it. Until next time, take care.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.